do or die for the defense. Michael, last week we talked about boom or bust for the offense. This week we're flipping over to defense because it feels like that's what everybody is questioning coming up for this season. It's been a lot of outgoing players, not a ton of incoming players. So we're going to break everything down for you by position group, what you lost, what you gained, what you retained, and how we're feeling for 2026. So, man, excited to get in this one. A lot to talk about. We're also going to talk about Tony White going into year two. Also, the schedule that they're going to be facing coming up. So we got a fully loaded show for you guys talking about 100% defense today because, man, this has been really the topic on everybody's mind. You know, we all kind of feel talking around the table of other podcasters and things like that and the fan base. I think most people understand that the offense will be competent at least, right? Right. Mike Norvell calling plays. Ashton Daniels sounds like he's probably going to be the quarterback to start the year. I think you'll be okay. Probably a little bit better than you were last year. Maybe not an elite type of offense, maybe not top 10 or anything like that, but competent. It's really going to depend on the defense. Like, are you going to have to go out and win 34, 31 games, 48, 45 type of games? Or is this defense going to kind of take shape of what we saw later in the year? Now, later in the year was against the not so great offenses on the schedule. So I do want to keep that in mind. But man, we're going to jump right into this and talk about Tony White as the DC first. Now, you know, Michael, here's the thing. People really took a disliking to Tony White last year, especially yes, when the UCLA rumors came up and all that stuff. Everybody was just really kind of really upset with how things were going. Everyone thought the 3-3-5 was trash. And you know what, man, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, right? We've seen it work in the ACC before. We saw him go away from the 3-3-5 some last year, running an even front to try and make up for some weaknesses across different parts of the defense. But the one thing that I did want to kind of reiterate in this opening segment about Tony White is that it was still year one, guys. We have to remember that. And it's not as much of a easy transition like it was for Gus Malzahn to take over an offense that was basically already built from his tree. You're talking about a complete different philosophy going from Adam Fuller's 4-2-5 to Tony White's 3-3-5. And so the one thing that I do want to kind of like drive home here is that the first year that he took over in Nebraska, they took a massive jump and they stayed on par with those numbers in year two. When he left, they went from the number 17th ranked scoring defense to 67th, right? The same thing can also be said about Syracuse. Look, when he took over, they made a massive jump, right? Things were not very good that first year. It was the COVID year, so he kind of had some limitations there. But going from 2020 to 2021, their scoring defense jumped from 90th to 64th. Their total defense went from 112th to 18th. Pass defense went from 96th to 26th. And run defense went from 104th to 26th. So he has shown, whether in the first year or the second year, whenever he kind of gets a chance to work that scheme in, the defense has gotten better. And when he left Syracuse, they were ranked 40th in scoring defense. Since then, they have finished 57th, 96th, and 130th. So my point with all this, and I'll throw it back to you, is, yeah, there are some things that I don't like about his defense. I don't like the soft coverage. I don't like how we got ate up on some certain things last year and didn't seem to adjust. There are some frustrations there, right? We can share in that. I don't love the 3-3-5 defense now that I've seen it in action, to be honest. I think there's going to be some challenges with some of the personnel limitations that you have this year. But I will say it's just a little bit too early for me to write Tony White off as a defensive coordinator here at Florida State, right? Let's give him another year. He's been able to pick out some more pieces to the pie and bring them in from the portal and from high school. So let's give him another year and let's see how things shake out. And then we'll get into some position groups. But man, give me some thoughts on Tony White and his 3-3-5 overall.
Yeah, listen, like this was, if we went back in time, I remember I did not love the Gus Malzahn hire. I was very much against it. And you did not love the Tony White hire. Remember that?
Yeah.
I got my Christmas present. You get one more year with yours. No, but what I would say is, like, you're absolutely right. This is the first year that we've had Tony White in that 3-3-5 defense. And usually, typically, under a Tony White defense, it's always that second year that we see a jump in production as far as, like, getting better statistically. And so we have to hope that, that we're going to see that. But that doesn't mean we can't lament on some of the things we saw this year. Now, some of the things I appreciated was, you know, I did like some of the exotic schemes to the blitzing nature. I wish they had blitzed a little bit more, but I did like the way that they were bringing people from different angles. Whereas under Adam Fuller, you knew where the blitz was coming from. You basically put a big sign up and say, I'm going to blitz under the Adam Fuller. Whereas in Tony White's defense, you had disguises. You had disguised coverage. They were rolling safeties down and up and at the snap. And so I really did like that. I did like what I would say the aggressiveness of the back three of that safety thing, that they were coming down. They were hitting. They were sticking their nose, especially Earl Little Jr. I did like that. I wished the thing I hate it. And you know, you and I have talked about this a lot. I've lamented about this, is the whole playing that, the way we play coverage and we play that zone on the back end, and we have guys giving up 10 yards before the snap because we're, I don't know, afraid to get beat. We think, and the reason why I say that is because you can play that kind of coverage if you have a front four, front three that can actually get to the quarterback, a la a Miami. If you notice, you go back and watch Miami, and I hate to give them any props. They still lost a national championship. I want to remind them of that. But what I loved about their defense is they didn't feel the need to blitz too often because they had a devastating front four, right? So you could play those coverage. You could play coverage like that with 10 yards off because you knew that front four was going to get to the quarterback. So I will say that I didn't, you know, I thought, you know, they only gave up an average of 138 yards per game in rush. That's not too bad. I'd like to see that clean up a little bit more. And they were very much a bend but don't break most time kind of defense. Outside of a couple games where they gave up, you know, I think 48, 46, whatever it was to Virginia, 34 to Pitt. Like, they gave up 46, 38, 34. Outside of that, and 40 to Florida. And outside of those games, you know, it really was, you weren't going to score necessarily as much. You probably could move the ball in the 20s, but you weren't going to score as much. And so I would say that I'm looking forward to season two of this defense to see. The thing I'm concerned about, and I know eventually we'll talk about, is does the depth help it get better in season two?
Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, if it's not much better, we can ship him on off to UCLA or wherever he wants to be a coach at. But I agree, man. There were some things I didn't like, the off coverage, things like that. You know, it was hard because you couldn't set an edge in that defense last year, which is, again, when I talk about personnel limitations, it didn't do a great job of bringing in edge setters on this defense. And we're going to talk about that next.
Right.
But I mean, I agree. You know, it's funny how you bring up I didn't really like the Tony White hire to begin with. And I think some of that did play out for the reasons I didn't like it, right? We saw at Nebraska, he got torched by some of the better offenses, the Indianas, the Michigan, a couple years back. And then, you know, you look at last year, some of the best offenses that he faced, Virginia. I mean, granted, it was double overtime, but you gave up 46 points there. Pitt was one of the better offenses that you faced. You gave up 34 there. The Florida game, honestly, I think they pretty much quit by that point, so you gave up 40 points there. But there's some things, again, like I said, that you just want to give him year two. You are bringing a lot of new pieces, so it is kind of hard to just automatically go, well, you get that year two bump in the system. But there is also a lot of pieces coming back that can help teach the other newcomers about this defense, like Blake Nicholson, the twins, the guys who have on the back end who are returning for this defense. I think you will see them a little more comfortable in the scheme this year and maybe able to do a few more things. And so the whole point is just, I think he deserves one more year before we really kind of decide one way or the other on how he's performed as a defensive coordinator here. But it's going to be really, really crucial to how the season goes, how that defense performs, because you got some tough offenses on the schedule this year that we're going to talk about at the end of the show. And I mean, he's going to have to go out and earn his money without a doubt. Now, let's get into some position groups here. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what you lost, what you gained, and what you retained, and kind of how we feel about these defensive position groups at this point in the offseason, because it pretty much feels like what you got is what you got going into next year. And so we're going to go through them. But before we do that, you guys already know today's sponsor is Alumni Hall FSU. 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee is the store location, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. They got everything you need, from football gear. Baseball season is here. They got baseball gear. So they'll get you right no matter what sport you feel like cheering for right now, whether you don't want to rep football or whether you just want to stick with baseball or you're wearing it year-round regardless, they got you covered. And make sure while you're there that you save 10% with code SPEAR. You can use that online or in store. So, again, we appreciate you guys for supporting those who support us, and we appreciate Alumni Hall for sponsoring this episode. So, Michael, let's start up front. Probably the most controversial position group of the offseason. Probably one of the worst handled position groups of the offseason as far as what you brought in, right? I mean, you lost a significant amount of players. And as we go through and talk about these position groups, hopefully my math is 100% correct. It may be 99% correct on these. Some of them, if they just didn't play at all, I just didn't even count them in the equation. So just know that going into it. But when you talk about the defensive line here, what you lost was 55% of your total snaps. Now, that number drops to 35% without Daryl Jackson in there because he was by far the biggest loss on this defensive line. 522 snaps for you last year. You look at the tackles, 57% is gone. That number drops to 30% without Daryl Jackson. Again, he led you, your defensive line unit in tackles with 45. You lost 57% of your tackles for loss, but you did retain your top three in TFLs. You lost 53% of your pressures. You retained four of your top six in pressure production, and you lost 69% of your sacks, but you did retain your top two in sack production. You also gained Rylan Kennedy from Texas A&M, Jalen Anderson from the JUCO ranks, and Jordan Sanders from Texas State. And so we're going to talk about all those guys now. So when you go down this list, and we'll make it quick here, of the guys you lost, Daryl Jackson is by far the one that's going to hurt the most, right? He was your defensive line leader in snaps, in tackles, in TFLs. I mean, the guy was just a machine for you last year. And not to mention that, but he also ate up a lot of blocks for you, a lot of blocks. He was able to free up the edge rushers to not really do a whole lot. But, he was a vital part. And the problem, I think, starts with who are you going to replace him with? Like, you realistically need a guy like Daniel Lyons to step into a leadership starter role, or you need Kevin Wynn to go from 40 snaps last year to 400 snaps this year. And that's a massive jump for a guy that only played 40 snaps as a freshman last year. That's a big ask. That's why I think the interior defensive line is even more disproportionately in trouble than the edges, right? Now, there is a lot of ways you can move guys around this defensive line. When you run the three technique, like, you can move a guy like Deonte McCray inside. You can move some guys around, which will help you cover up that. But, Daryl Jackson will be the biggest loss of this entire group. Jason Jenkins, is a guy that played 275 snaps last year, not very productive. We know he was coming off the injury. James Williams, I'm happy to see him gone. Just wasn't what he was built to be, right? Amari Williams, a young guy there. Jaden Jones, two guys that just, they had some flash, but they weren't really productive for you. KJ Sampson's another guy off the middle that left. The rest are kind of, didn't really do a whole lot for you.
Right.
The best news is you actually retained pretty well, right? You just didn't gain very well, but your retention was pretty good, right? You were able to bring the Desir twins back. Obviously, when you talk about Mandrill, was a guy that had 7.5 tackles for loss last year, 24 pressures, and 6.5 sacks. I mean, that's huge to get him back. And that was as a true freshman. So you hope that he can build onto that in a sophomore campaign. Of course, his brother Daryl played 300 snaps for you last year. Also put up not as good, but still okay numbers there. Now, I really like Deonte McCray. I think he is a good player for you. 4.5 tackles for loss last year, 10 pressures, only one sack. The guy you're circling, as we talked about, is going to be Daniel Lyons. He played 425 snaps last year. He's kind of always been that second fiddle to the starting tackle guy. Man, it's time. Like, you have got to step into that starting role. Yep. 26 tackles last year compared to 45 for DJAC. And then you're also talking about 3.5 tackles for loss compared to 3, so he's pretty good there. He's got the potential, man. He can do it. It's just, can he do it consistently? Also, you get Diamante Diggs back. Kevin Wynn, we talked about, really didn't do anything on a stat sheet last year. He's going to have to take on a 400-snap role this year, without a doubt. Now, a couple other guys to watch here is Tylon Lee. He is going to be – he only played 20 snaps last year in his redshirt year, but that was a very high-profile recruit coming out of high school. It would be nice to see him be able to step into a much larger role this year. But, all in all, man, when you talk about it, the gaining part is what worries me the most, right? You brought in Rylan Kennedy from Texas A&M, a guy who was a rotational player, played 176 snaps last year, had 14 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, 14 pressures and two sacks. The good thing about him is he had 14 pressures and 72 pass rush snaps. James Williams had 22 and 151, and Jason Jenkins had 9 and 124. So I think from the pressure department, he's actually shown to be pretty good. But I also have the same question that we had with James Williams when he got here.
Right.
Is he ready to go from a rotational or third down package player to a full-time starter role for you if that's what you need him to do this year? And I think you do.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. I've heard a lot of good things about the guy. He just kind of got passed on a talented defensive line, but you're going to need him this year. And so the last one, obviously, to talk about here is Jordan Sanders comes over from Texas State. Not a real impactful guy, but he played 365 snaps last year. You know, I think when you break it down, Michael, and I'll throw it back to you on this, is the way I feel about the defensive line is you retained a solid core of production. The Desir twins, Deontay McCray, Daniel Lyons. You need Kevin Wynn, Tylon Lee, and Diamante Diggs to step up, like I said, to have much larger roles this year. You're going to have to stay healthy, because if you lose even one guy on this defensive line, you're in trouble quick. But Rylan Kennedy, he can easily replace James Williams or Jason Jenkins. Sanders can replace KJ Sampson or any of the other defensive tackles that left other than D-Jack. But you did take a hit to the depth, and you did not add any top-tier guys, which is what worries me about the ceiling of this defensive line. And the depth is definitely a big concern, right? If you lose anybody, you're in trouble. Now, the other one that I'm interested to see is Jalen Anderson from the JUCO level. Now, granted, we took a JUCO guy last year who really did not do anything for you in Tylan Coleman, who was also highly rated coming out of JUCO. But this is the guy that had 41 tackles, 11.5 tackles for loss, and 7 sacks as a sophomore in JUCO. Was the number one JUCO edge rusher coming out per 247. So I worry about the depth of this group. But as I said, man, I think you kept the pieces that I liked, and you really kind of cut the fat. The problem is you didn't really add in enough back in there for me to feel confident that this is a 12, 13, 14 game roster on the defensive line. You take a couple injuries, man, you're in trouble quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, so right now on the 26 roster, they have 16 D lineman people, right? Whatever. So that's DT and D defensive end. Now, we know that Florida State right now uses a three-man front, typically. That's the base defense, the three-man front. But if you go back and watch a lot of the film, they would sometimes go to a four-man front, sometimes a bear front, which is five, right? Or they'll just roll that linebacker down, either the Sam or the Will, they'll roll that down. They call that the jack position. They'll roll that down, and now you have a five-man front or a four-man front, just depending on how they want to do that. Where for me is, we've been talking about depth since the moment the season was over. What are they going to do with this depth? We're not trying to be negative, but just being real, they failed at adding quality depth, or what we believe was quality depth, during the transfer portal season. Obviously, they're bringing in freshmen from the high school recruiting ranks. So the question for me now is, depth is depth. This is what they have. This is what they're going into the season. So can, like you said, can Kevin Wynn, can Deontay McCray, can Rylan Kennedy, can Jalen Anderson, can Diamante Diggs, can those guys step up alongside the Desir twins? And really the other twin, can he step up as well too? Because, you know, we talk about Mandrier, but Daryl, like, you know, he had very minimum impact last year, whereas Mandrill had a bigger impact. So can those guys step into the position and create? Now it's about creating quality depth, meaning can these guys get developed enough to be able to be relied upon, like you said, in this 12, hopefully 13, maybe 14, maybe 15. I mean, just saying, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can they get relied upon to be developed so that they can be relied upon and actually to have quality depth? That's really the biggest question for me going into this season. We could talk about the linebacker and the DBs. Yes, those are important, but man, there's nothing more important than the trenches. We saw that throughout the playoffs. We saw that throughout the season, that when that trench got wore down, man, it was desolate.
Yeah, that's huge. And, you know, I was just on Locked On Seminoles yesterday, and with me and Brian, we were talking about, it's like, you look at the national championship, you look at the playoffs with Miami, you look at the Super Bowl with, you know, the Seahawks. Those games were won and lost in the trenches, and this was the one thing that we worried about all offseason because, frankly, you lost nine guys, and about seven of them were kind of whatever. You only brought in two, right? Yep. Now, you also add in the high school guys, which I'm glad you brought up because I forgot to touch on that. You brought in a boatload of high school defensive linemen. I just worry that maybe they're banking a little bit too much on, oh, we hit on the Twins. Hopefully these guys hit too, right? I don't love – in a year as crucial as this, having to play a freshman defensive tackle, you know, in a game against Alabama or down the stretch against a Miami or even further down the stretch against, you know, an NC State at the end of the year when maybe that's the only guys you got that are healthy. And so that is the part that I do worry about. I mean, obviously those guys can provide you depth against Central Arkansas and New Mexico State, but yeah, man, I think the good thing is you kept a lot of pieces I like. The bad thing is who's going to, even Ashlyn, this is what Ashlyn Barker said, right?
Yep.
Who's going to come on the field when those guys got to go off the field?
Exactly.
And as you know, and we've talked about before on the show, like you hinted at a second ago, man, everything sets up off the defensive line. Like, you can have a great secondary, they can only cover for so long.
Absolutely.
Can have great linebackers, but they can only stop and clean up so much. It all starts on the defensive line. And to me, while I like some of the pieces that you have, I feel like this was the one area that you should have really been aggressive in the portal that you weren't.
Now, I don't want to get us off topic because I know what we're trying to do on topic, but I just want to ask this question of you because it just came to mind. I'd love your thought. For the majority of Mike Norvell's tenure, everybody that has any inkling, pay attention to the recruiting world, has said, you know, we recruit these high school guys, then we portal over them, right? And so that's why we can't, you know, close or whatever, blah, 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 right? Do you think that maybe some of this with a buttload of the defensive line we're bringing in is because we're trying to play younger guys to show future recruits, hey, we're not going to be that kind of portal program anymore. We're going to be largely dependent on high school guys. And so we're going to show you, we've already done that with the Twins. I'm not saying it's a good scratch. I'm just wondering if some of this is a blowback to that. What do you think?
No, I think that's a great point because I think that's part of it, right? I think one, defensive tackles are expensive in the portal. So, you know, we heard they were going to spend $2 to $2.5 million on a quarterback.
They did.
Then we know they did not. So I don't know. It could have been maybe they just couldn't get into the shark infested waters of everybody needing trench players. It could certainly be a strategy that they're thinking about. The only thing that I think in kind of retort to that is you don't really have a lot of time to sit here and hope that these young guys happen. You can't take another, you know, oh, well, we won five games this season, but look what we got coming back. Like, it's just not going to be good enough. And so, to me, you should have done, at least on the interior, you should have taken at least one big-time guy on the interior. And maybe they know Kevin Wynn can be that guy. But, man, I mean, you're going to have to go from 440 to 400 snaps in one year and be
a big risk,
pretty darn good while you're doing it. And so that's a big risk. It is a big risk. And a big part of the problem is because the recruiting at the defensive line positions has been subpar for many years. And so you're having to kind of pray for high school guys to work out or get the best you can out of the portal and maybe settle for what is available and what you can afford because you just didn't have a whole lot of talent sitting there waiting on the defensive line. Same thing with the offensive line. I mean, it's just been, you're finally getting out from under a lot of the bad recruits that Alex Atkins brought in and didn't develop. So it's an interesting strategy. And I mean, who knows, man, hopefully some of these high school defensive linemen hit, but again, it's just such a crucial year for Mike Norvell and the staff. I feel like you definitely probably should have really went hard in the portal on the trenches. And I don't feel like they did enough on the defensive line.
I'd agree.
Notwithstanding, I like the pieces that they have. It doesn't scream playoff defensive line, right? Mandrel Basir is pretty much the guy. Everyone else is kind of like, I guess we'll see. Now moving back to the linebackers, where I think they did an okay job, but it's a lot of the same story, right? Yep. Where you lost a lot, but you gained a couple really good pieces. Now, this is where I get excited for the linebacker. So looking here on your snaps, you lost 55%. You lost 57% of your tackles, also 57% of your TFLs. You lost 53% of your pressures and 69% of your sacks. So you lost over half of your production at all these different categories. Now, you did gain a lot in what you brought in. 958 snaps, 176 tackles, 12 tackles for loss, and 4.5 sacks by two guys, Chris Jones from Southern Miss and Makai Gabor from UNC/Nebraska, started his career at Nebraska. So obviously, you know, we talk about who you bring back. You retain Blake Nicholson, played the most snaps for you, over 400 last year. He was your leading tackler at linebacker. Look, it's time for Blake to really take that step. It's time, right? Yeah, he was a highly touted guy coming out, four-star coming out of California. We need to see it just come together for him. Yes. It's not to say he's been good or bad. Like, overall, he's had spurts of good and spurts of bad, but we just need it to come together this year, right? Yeah. Then you bring Omar Graham back out of the portal, 318 snaps last year, 38 tackles, not a whole lot, no tackles for loss, no sacks last year. He had a – doesn't really cover – this was a desperation move, if we're being honest, right?
Yes.
Because you brought him back before you brought in the other two guys. I think you were just kind of like, well, we got to have some linebackers in a 3-3-5. So you brought him back. It's not to say he's a bad player. He's just never been a good player either, right? Yep. I would just say he's kind of a below-average college linebacker. The other one that I think is interesting to see what happens with him this year is Caleb LaValle, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't play all last year because of an injury. Injured. But at UNC in 2024 as a freshman, he played 114 snaps and went off in his one start in the bowl game against UConn. Had a 74.5 PFF grade. So, I mean, he was pretty good when he got the one chance to play. So, he'll be the one that's interesting. Now, what you lost – it's not guys I'm really crying over, right? Justin Cryer was a good locker room guy. He was actually mildly productive for you, played almost 400 snaps, 43 tackles. Coverage grade was pretty terrible. Elijah Herring just wasn't really who we thought he was going to be. Stephon Thompson was kind of okay at like the jack position because he was kind of a bigger linebacker. But, you know, when he came to Florida State, we had scratched our head and said, well, you know, he followed Tony White from Syracuse, Nebraska, and couldn't start there. Is there a reason for that? And we kind of saw why. And then the other guys that you lost really didn't make an impact, Jaden Parrish and Gav Holman.
Right.
Now, when you talk about who you gained, this is why I get excited about the linebacker room. Because when you talk about Chris Jones, a guy that played 706 snaps last year, 135 tackles, basically more than your starting three combined. 9.5 tackles for loss, 15 pressures, 3.5 sacks. Coverage could be better for sure, but the guy's just a productive machine that played 700 snaps last year. Like, he's your LB1. This is your starting linebacker right out of the gate. And then I also think the Makai Gabor guy, I hope I'm saying his last name wrong. I could not be, but if I do, if I'm not, I apologize. I think this guy could be pretty good for you too, right? 252 snaps last year at UNC. 41 tackles. He wasn't really a starter there, but he had a PFF coverage grade of 64.7, both in 2025 and 2024 at Nebraska. He played 617 snaps under Tony White in this 3-3-5 defense, so he knows it well. And, you know, again, man, he was pretty good. 49 tackles in 2024, 6 tackles for loss, 5 pressures, a sack, and a good coverage grade there that last year in the 3-3-5 in Nebraska. So between these two, I think you definitely upgraded the linebacker core, and it needed it because they had to clean up a lot last year, and they just weren't great at doing it. Of course, the last two I do want to mention is you did add Chris Thomas, JUCO linebacker, but we know he's coming off a torn ACL late in the year. I didn't really factor him into this equation. And then Isaiah Williams is a high school recruit that I think you do factor into the equation. Will he be a starter this year with the guys you brought in? Probably not. Do I think he'll get on the field this year? Probably so, because he's one of the best linebackers you have signed in a long time. And as you pointed out with the defensive line, it would be nice to see a freshman linebacker be able to show out and get some serious snaps on this defensive side of the ball. So, man, all in all, I think it's kind of like the defensive line where the pieces that you lost, they were a big portion of your production, but it wasn't exactly good linebacker play to begin with. So my feelings aren't hurt by any of the ones that you lost, but that's mostly because of what you added. I love the two linebackers that you added. I love that you kept Blake Nicholson in the fold, and I'm excited to see what Caleb LaValle can be. So probably a little thin on the depth here too, if you go true 3-3-5, but overall, man, you got 2 to 4 pieces there that I think could be pretty good for Florida State.
Yeah, I think the most important of those pieces is Blake Nicholson. What happens with this guy? Now, he's supposed to be a coverage linebacker. You know, he's supposed to be able to move well in space, be able to he's not the kind of linebacker, though he tries his hardest to be a gap linebacker. He doesn't have the typical linebacker size that you want running into that gap. You want him out on coverage, him covering flats, him covering hook routes, him covering slot, you know, 10-yard post routes, stuff like that in the middle of the field. That's where you want Blake Nicholson. That's where he and when you watch the film, you see he actually thrives in that kind of way. So I think he is probably the most important improvable piece, meaning you need to see improvement from him. I think you got a really intriguing product in Caleb LaValle. He was injured. So does he actually come back this year and show the potential that we thought he would have showed last year? I think that's important. I love the Chris Jones ad. This dude has a lot of tread in them tires, as they like to say.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping he's got one more good year before we
change
that tire. But if he does, man, he, like you said, he is LB1 starting the season off there. And I do think you got to find a way. I don't care if, you know, give him some important snap, but the Isaiah Williams kid, I mean, gosh, he looks, when you look at his high school film, you're like, this dude could start potentially day one. So,
yeah,
it'll be real interesting to see there. Yeah, the Makai guy, you know, what I like about it is he's familiar with Tony White's scheme. So, you know, he's probably going to be a culture guy. It'll be interesting to see how much snaps he get. If he's in the rotation early, I think that's important there. But to me, it's Chris, it's Caleb, it's Blake. Those are probably your three right there and really Blake has got to be, because if Blake is not, now you're rotating whatever that position is, whether that's the Mike or he usually plays like a Will. So whether that's the Will, like if you're not leveraging that as well too. And so I think Chris will probably end up being that Jack position that's rotated up to the line. So I like that, but this actually segment does not give me much worry yet. Meaning I like the additions more than I hated the subtractions. And honestly, I didn't hate the subtractions. Like, they were pointless. Not pointless in people, just pointless in production. And so I feel more confident, and my confidence level is not super high about this defense, but I feel more confident about the linebackers going into this season than I did last season.
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, when you have two guys that replace the production of the five guys that you lost, those two guys are pretty good. And it says a lot about the five guys you lost. But, you know, I think the thing is with Chris Jones, it's not been the greatest cover linebacker. So you're going to have to kind of hide that a little bit. Yep. So that's why, you know, if you want more athleticism at the linebacker position, like you said, that's going to be a Caleb LaValle. That's going to be a Blake Nicholson. That's going to be a freshman in Isaiah Williams. Yep. But I mean, the guy, Chris Jones, can be a thumper for you. And the last time that you brought a 100 plus tackler over from the G5, it was Tatum Bethune. And the guy turned out to be pretty darn good for you. So, you know, had you not added Chris Jones, which, you know, there for a little while, we were a little sketchy on that because Ole Miss was trying to hold him prisoner. The thing is, man, if you had not added him, I would feel totally different about this position. And as long as he can stay healthy and if he can play 600 snaps for you this year and do similar production, I mean, that's just laying a massive Band-Aid over that linebacker room that was not good last year. Yeah. So between them two, and most of my hype for the Makai kid is based off what he did at Nebraska. As like you said, he's very familiar with Tony White's 3-3-5 defense. So I think that is a plus there to help people get up to speed. And so, I mean, so far, none of the guys he's brought with him have really been big impact guys. So I'm going to limit my expectations there, but at least – like you said, he has played in this defense for multiple years, 600 plus snaps. So he's familiar with it. So I do think you did pretty good at the linebacker position. All in all, you know, you kind of let some of the guys, and some of these guys were Stephon Thompson and Elijah Herring. They were gone anyway, right? They didn't just leave. They were out of eligibility. So you were going to lose some of those guys. Cryer's the only one I think that you really lost to the portal that mattered, you know, that had any kind of impact on the season last year. But again, I think he did a pretty good job of replacing them, but to your point, man, Blake Nicholson's got to be that guy this year. He's got to step up because I trust some of what the others, but man, you need a strong guy there at his position. Now, let's move it on back to the defensive backs here where, you know what, man, you lost a lot, but I actually kind of feel good about where you're at, if I'm being completely honest here. And so to look at the numbers, the raw numbers here, you lose 65% of your snaps, 62% of your tackles, 69% of your PBUs, and 91% of your interceptions. So it feels like the secondary got absolutely gutted, right? Now, you did gain Nehemiah Chandler from South Alabama. We're going to talk about all these guys in a second. Carson Hobbs from Notre Dame, C.J. Richard Jr. from Illinois State at the FCS level, and Makai Jones from Duke. So you added 1,550 snaps of experience, 132 tackles, 16 PBUs, and 5 interceptions. When you look at what you lost, you did a good job of replacing it. And so, man, yeah. When we go through this defensive back list here, again, you lost a lot. But I think a lot of it was very concentrated in, and I kind of broke this down into safeties versus corners. So we kind of had two different positions to talk about here. Your retained is Ashlin Barker, I think was a good retention, right? He was in the portal and you pulled him back out, played almost 500 snaps for you last year, had 48 tackles, 5 TFLs, kind of led your secondary in TFLs there. He's kind of a bigger guy that can be a thumper for you. And he's turned into a pretty good player. Let's just say that. KJ Kirkland is another guy that I like. 240 snaps last year, 31 tackles. Didn't do a whole lot in the pass game with no PBUs or picks. But, man, I mean, again, he was a guy that we've seen look good on the field at the safety position. It gets a little thin after that. Antonio Cromartie Jr. played 28 snaps. Jarvis Boatwright Jr. played 14. Donnie Hebert with 40. Max Redmond with 20. None of them really made a big impact on any of the games. Now, who you lost was Shaheem Brown. 215 snaps last year, 32 tackles, no real big deal in the pass game there. You know, the thing with Shaheem was, man, he looked really good in 23, just never really recovered from that slide in 24 and again in 25. Earl Little Jr. is one of the biggest losses that you took here. 674 snaps. The guy was just a workhorse for you, led you in tackles with 76, probably also led you in missed tackles because he forgot he had arms when he tackled. You know, could have very well – I mean, if you're being honest, I know you can't really boil a game down to one play, but just about cost you the UVA game and just about cost you the Pitt game by giving up 2 touchdowns on 2 missed tackles. So he was a very productive player. But again, when he played 674 snaps, you're going to produce a lot of numbers, right? The other one that you lost here, and Ohio State's about to find out, they are super hyped about him. And I'm not saying he's not a good and talented player.
Exactly.
He ain't Caleb Downs. Let's just say that. So buckle up there, Buckeyes. Edwin Joseph is another big loss for you, right? 621 snaps, 37 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, 5 PBUs, and 3 picks. So, man, I mean, he was a guy that was productive. He wasn't always great, right? He was more of a man concept guy, which is what he was recruited for under Adam Fuller. Not really a thriver in the zone defense perspective, per se, but – still, I mean, he's a guy that played over 600 snaps for you. That's going to be hard to replace. And then you also lost Christian White as well. Now, who you gained at the safety position, you gained C.J. Richard Jr., played 529 snaps for Illinois State last year, who was the FCS runner-up. 60 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, 2 PBUs, and 3 picks. Had a wonderful 76 coverage grade, a stellar 82.8 run defense grade, and an overall PFF grade of 79.1. I think he's a great addition. Can he translate from the FCS to the Power 4 level? That's the biggest question there. And then you bring in Makai Jones, the guy from Duke, 305 snaps last year, 35 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, 1 PBU, no picks. Coverage grade could be a little better, 59.3. Run defense grade was solid at 75.9 overall, 65.8. But he was still a young guy last year, managed to play 305 snaps, I believe, as a freshman there at Duke. And, you know, he's coming from a Manny Diaz defense, which is – Manny's a good defensive coordinator, so the guy knows how to play defense. And I think these two guys, combined with Ashlin Barker and KJ Kirkland, give you 4 really good options at the safety position. So give me some thoughts on safety, and then we'll go into the corners. But, you know, man, again, you lost some big-time snap eaters, I guess you want to call it, in Earl Little and Edward Joseph. But from a talent perspective, man, I like the two guys that you added, and I like some of the guys that you brought back. I'm glad that you got Barker back out of the portal too.
Yeah, I think getting Barker was big. I think that probably was a cork in the hole of a boat, basically, right? Because at the time, they were all leaving. And so to get Barker back, it was like everybody's like, man, are we going to have any DBs back there? So to get Barker back, I thought was huge. I'll say this really quick about Edwin Joseph is – you know, sometimes a scheme will just be just not a great fit for you. And so when you were developed in a man focused scheme like the 4-2-5 that Adam Fuller ran. And then you have to switch over to this zone scheme where it's predominantly, it's very few times that he will call a back end man coverage. So you're predominantly in a zone coverage. You know, again, like you always say, you know, there's nothing against the rules of you getting better. So it's not like he couldn't have gotten better at it, but it just wasn't, he just wasn't getting better at it. And so for him to go over to Ole Miss to Pete Golding runs this 4-2-5 hybrid 3-4 where he does split coverage, you know, field split coverage where on one side of the field he's running zone, on the other side he's running man. And so, you know, putting Edwin Joseph in that man side, right, who's a man, you know, dominant cover DB, you're probably going to feel a little bit better about that. He probably also wanted more money and all like that. We all like know that stuff.
Yeah.
I think FSU did the right thing by saying, hey, this is what we are. This is what we can pay. You know, if you can't, you're out. I am more, this is weird because I'm like concerned and I'm like excited about the DB. I'm not as concerned about the DB as I'm concerned about the defensive line. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not as excited about the DB as I'm excited about the linebacker. It's kind of like a neutral with the DBs because I'm curious.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, like it's just neutral. Like there's some concern, but there's also some excitement. So it kind of just evens itself out. I'm curious to see who steps up into those other roles there, right? Who replaces Earl Little Jr.? Because, yes, the dude didn't know he had arms, which is super frustrating. He cost us almost 2 games. And we end up losing those 2 games. But on the other side of it, though, that dude stuck his nose where it should be. And we, like, I know everybody else wants to forget Alabama. We were there. We saw this dude light some people up.
Yeah.
You heard the cracking of helmets when he hit you. And so, you know, who steps into that role? Who does that? Is that Barker? Is that someone else there as well? And those safeties, because Tony White likes to roll those safeties down and run support, you know, it's going to be very important for them to find that replacement.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I do like about Ashlyn Barker and Kirkland a little bit. They got a little bit of size, so if you need to put them in the box, it can almost be like a light linebacker. But I think you put it in a really good way before we talk about the cornerbacks. Is I do feel like with the secondary, I feel like I'm not as concerned as I am with the defensive line. I'm not as confident as maybe I am with the linebackers. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about them, but I'm not confident in them either in a weird kind of way. Now, the other X factor that we haven't talked about is obviously it's going to be under different direction this year. There is no more Pat Surtain. And so we're going to see how that plays out. Now, they, you know, as much as I love Pat Surtain, they haven't really played very well the last 2 years. So,
how dare you, Jesse, say that?
Right, exactly. Like, just calling it like it is. Now, when we switch to the cornerback position, this one is pretty interesting, right? You lose Jerry Wilson, who played 712 snaps for you, had 3 interceptions, 42 tackles. He was not quite the all-conference guy we saw at Houston, but he wasn't really a liability either. Wasn't great by any means. Shamar Arnaud, I hate that they invested 345 snaps in him last year, and then he hits the portal and leaves, but it's just the nature of the game nowadays. Kai Bates also is a guy who really didn't contribute anything, and he left. But when you talk about who you retained, first off, getting Jabril Rawls to stay, which, you know, he was in the portal essentially, was massive. This is an NFL caliber corner. He played 374 snaps for you last year, had 40 tackles. He had 2 PBUs and a pick. Then you talk about Quindarius Jones, unfortunately got hurt early in the season last year, but he also played 70 snaps for you. That's a guy that's very talented. Charles Lester played 90 snaps last year. I was kind of surprised when I saw that number. I don't feel like he stood out a whole lot, but
really
got almost 100 snaps last year. Didn't, you know, only 4 tackles, no other stats recorded. So he's still got some development to go. But I feel good about Jabril Rawls and Quindarius being at least your top two in there. Right. And then you also bring back Jamari Howard, Zay Thomas, Ricky Knight. You got a bunch of those young guys that just haven't really done a whole lot yet, but they're still talented. Now, I think the one guy that's going to push for a starting job that you brought in is Nehemiah Chandler, right? Yeah. This is a guy who comes from South Alabama, 608 snaps last year, 32 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, 13 PBUs.
Come on,
sing it,
baby.
Sing it to me. That's music to my ears. Led the Sun Belt Conference in PBUs. I mean, basically had more PBUs than your entire team did.
Oof.
I'll take it all day and twice on Sundays. Also had 2 picks there, so that's big. Now, the Carson Hopkins from Notre Dame, I've said my feelings on him before. I don't think he's that good when you watch the tape, but he did play 108 snaps last year. Had five tackles, no other recorded stats. So if that tells you something, 100 snaps, five tackles, no stats. Otherwise, not a big impact guy, but he at least gives you some depth with a guy that's played 100 snaps at the power four level. So between Rawls, Q, and Nehemiah Chandler, I think he got three good options there. And then you're just going to need one of those other guys, the Charles Lester, the Ricky Knight, the young guys. You're just going to need one of them to step up. Now, to throw it into the mix here, you also did bring in Chuck Keenan from the high school level. Given the way the other high school DBs haven't really got on the field a whole lot, I don't expect that to be a big bump in production. But, you know, again, man, you lost a lot, but I think you actually did a pretty fair job of replacing stuff here too.
Now, okay, remind me real quick. Zay Thomas, deep corner or safety?
He was listed as taking cornerback snaps per PFF last year. So, okay.
So I'm curious about him because he was a big time recruit. If you remember that, that was one of Pat Surtain's big gets out of Miami. They lit it up. They lit up the whole Hard Rock sign there. I remember that whole recruitment, and he was supposed to be this guy that they felt like could see the field fresh, like pure freshman year true freshman year. And so I'm wondering, like, does he become that guy? I think you see that fourth corner spot when they go to that, you know, when they go to the four corners, when they go to that nickel look that they sometimes bring out. I wonder if you see a rotation between him and Charles Lester and Ricky Knight. I wonder if those three kind of factor in somewhere, especially early in the season when you're playing a Central Arkansas or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But yes, I thought it was massive to get Rawls back. I thought, if you don't bring Rawls back, this cornerback room is in trouble, right?
Yeah.
My hope is that Q has, you know, Kadarius Jones has healed, and now he showed flashes of being pretty decent last year as well too. So I think with Jones and with Rawls and then with Nehemiah Chandler, I think you have a solid three.
Yeah.
I'm not as down on you as about Hobbs. I know he didn't show much in his Notre Dame film, but I'm wondering if it because the scheme again. So I wonder if he gets in the scheme, does he play better? And so I'm curious to see that. I'm sure we'll see that very early on and we'll be able to like, nope, Jesse was right again. Or I might be right for the first time in my life about this, but I'm curious about that. This room, I think if you can figure out who that fourth cornerback is, I feel actually really good about this room going into the season. Like, I feel like you have a decent set of corners, at least three that you can count on that have long production, that have shown good flashes consistently over time that you can depend on in that back end.
Yeah, and in fairness, I only watched the Texas A&M game against Notre Dame, so that was a pretty good offense. I hope he turns out to be pretty good, but again, you know, we'll see how it is under the direction of Blue Adams, the new coach.
Right.
But man, I mean, like you said, I feel pretty good about you having the depth. I do worry a slight bit about, but I think you got a good four safeties that you feel okay about and a good about three to four corners that you feel pretty good about. Right. You just, you're going to need to develop like a Charles Lester through that New Mexico State game, through those Central, you're going to need them to be ready in case you need them. Right. Stay ready. So you don't have to get ready, as they say. Now, the last thing that I want to talk about here real quick is Tony White's going to have a little bit of a tough test coming into this season. Now, we know last year the defense started off a little bit rough and then kind of battened down. I mean, they did good against Alabama, but then they gave up some points against Virginia, against Pitt was their probably worst defensive game of the year. They battened down the hatches a little bit later in the season against some of the not-so-good offenses, which, again, is what I talked about with Tony White, right? Very good at shutting down bad offenses. Kind of sketchy against some of the better offenses out there.
Right.
But, man, I mean, when you look at last year, they faced only one top 25 offense. Now, again, this is projecting because we don't know what last year's teams are going to look like this year, right? But last year, they faced one top 25 defense, five offenses ranked in the top 50, but four ranked 100th or below. You had Florida, who put up 40 on you, Virginia Tech, Kent State, and Stanford were all just 100th or below. This year, it does look a little bit different, right? You still only have one top 25 offense coming back this year, and that is Pitt. But you have seven offenses on the schedule that were top 50 in scoring offense last year, and only two of them ranked outside of the 100s. And that one of those was Florida, who has a new offensive coordinator, who is a good one, a new quarterback, who he brought with him, and a running back who absolutely torched us last year. Yeah. So that's the thing, man. The only other offense ranked outside of the 100s is New Mexico State, and you would expect to kind of mollywop them anyway. Of course, you have the FCS Central Arkansas right. in there too. But you got some pretty darn solid offenses on that schedule next year when you talk about a Pitt, who was number 20 last year, SMU, who was 26 last year, Miami, who was 35th, and vastly upgraded that offense going into next year. UVA was a top 40 offense. NC State brings back CJ Bailey. They were 44th. Louisville, you add to the schedule this year, they were 46th. So, man, I mean, you got – it's going to be tough. So that's why we wanted to talk about the defense today, because – it's going to be really, really important for this defense to have a big year. You might have to win some shootouts next year. I don't know that I love that with the quarterback situation that you have.
Yep.
So it's going to be imperative for this defense. If you want to win some games and you want to get to 8 wins or something like that, this defense is going to have to hold up against some pretty solid offenses. You know, and again, I think there are going to be some personnel limitations, but what my hope is that you kept most of your best pieces on the defense. You just severely lack depth, and I know that's a challenge in modern college football is to hold depth anymore because everyone's looking for playing right. time and money somewhere else. But year two in the system under Tony White with a lot of the – you know, it's kind of like he had a chance to figure out who he liked and who he didn't now.
Yeah.
And you were able to – you did a good job of retention, and they added a few key pieces. But, you know, again, it's just – I question whether this defense is built for a 13, 14, 15-game season.
Yep.
But if we're only worried about 12, you know, we'll see how it goes. But, man – it's going to be a tough slate, so I hope they're ready for the challenge. But I'm hoping in year two, with most of the good pieces remaining intact, I hope the defense has a better year last year because or next year because they weren't good at stretches last year, but then they did enough to win you some games later in the season, right? And the offense just kind of wet the bed, especially in the road games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you go back and look at last season. There should have been several games that you had won because the defense gave you an opportunity to win. I mean, you think about that. Like, think about, obviously, Stanford. Obviously, yeah. Clemson.
NC State was another one.
NC yep. State, Clemson. You know, they – so you think about, there's three wins right there. Three that you should have won. You think – if you think about that, you're 8-4 going into the bowl game. If you win those three games, that the defense actually gave you a chance to win.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest thing is, yeah, do they take a step up at this next year? It, you know, the first, gosh, I just looked at the schedule. The first of the first 7 games, 5 of your games are against, you know, really good offenses that are returning. And I know you look at that Alabama game and say, well, they lost a quarterback. Well, guess what? They're going to lean heavily on the run game because they're breaking in these, you know, younger quarterbacks. So they're going to run the ball. And let's be reminded, I hate to even bring this up, but the way that defense finished the season was they got punked by one running back.
Yeah.
Who just ran all over you and made you look like a wussy, right?
Yeah.
And they just hit you over and over again. So what does that do to the psyche coming into this season? Are you angry? Are you going to go and try to show the world that you're not that team? That's what I'm curious about with this defense coming into the next season.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's not illegal to get better, so that's what we're hoping for. But I do think overall, you know, I just worry if I had to put my finger on one position, it would be the interior defensive line. Yep. Everywhere yep. else, I think you're as good to potentially better, maybe not deeper, but right. better than you were last year. But that interior defensive line and losing Darryl Jackson and having to rely on two guys who are unproven – man, I do worry about that, right? Because there's a few times you got ran on last yep. year. And so you're going to need those linebackers to step up. And you're going to need some of these guys, a Kevin Wynn, like we talked about earlier, to step into a much, much larger role. But that's going to do it for this episode, guys. We just want to talk about the defense. We talked about boom or bust for the offense. It's do or die for the defense in 2026. Because, hey, if they do, there might be a 2027. If they die, I think everybody's going to be gone, and we might be looking at an entire new coaching yep. staff. But like we said with the offense, hey, that's kind of what you want. So it's a win-win situation for Florida right. State fans. But hey, look, guys, if you enjoyed this episode, drop a like and subscribe on the YouTube channel to stay connected with your source for fan-driven FSU content, Plant the Spear. Also, check out our website, plantthespear.com. I've actually been writing a couple articles there. Brian Smith from Locked On Seminoles is talking about helping us write for some recruiting stuff too. So I'm looking forward to that. Be on the lookout for that. Also, rate and review on the podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I was looking over our podcast stats the other day. A ton of you guys listen on Apple. It would mean the world to us if you would give us a 5-star review on there to help us reach other Noel fans. If you're interested in taking the support one step further, it's only like $5 a month. And we got to figure out some details. I think Michael told me he was paying a little Apple tax there on the membership fee. So we're gonna figure that out. But it's like $5 a month to join the PTS tribe. And we really appreciate it. Everything that you guys give goes right back into the show. I'm actually hoping to plan some preseason appreciation boxes for our members that I've been working on in the background here. So, man, can't thank you guys enough for the support. And we will be with you guys on the next show. As always, Michael,
go Noles.